Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
I like to sing backup.
Okay, sing backup, not lead vocal?
Well, I mean, I was the lead vocal, but yeah. Let's be honest. Yeah. Like, let's be honest how amazing my vocals are.
Yeah, that's right.
No.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
The voice of an angel.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Podcasts for Good. This is season 2, episode 6. We're talking about blood.
Yes, fact.
Specifically, we're talking about blood cancers and blood disorders.
Blood.
I am program manager Philip Kerrigan, host of Podcasts for Good, and this alongside me as always is...
Heather Lucas, fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
This is a pretty mysterious and, I have to say, kind of intimidating subject when you first see it.
You scared?
You scared, bro? because it really hits on something that, like, well, cancer in and of itself is always still a mysterious beast for a lot of people.
And terrifying, too.
Yeah. And then on to take that and do something that is still as mysterious as blood, for those of us who are lay people, who aren't in the whole, like, mixing of DNAs and genomes and all those sort of things, and white blood cells and blah, blah, blah.
I'm curious if you mean just you or both of us. That's funny.
I mean, do you...
You don't know what I do when I'm at home.
Okay. So maybe you have a Jurassic Park-like lab in your house where you're cloning dinosaurs. I don't know that for sure.
Well...
Could be wrong.
I do have a coworker, a close friend, who does want to be a raptor, so...
Trying
to help him out.
That's correct. But what was really cool is we talked to two organizations, DKMS Americas, live from New York... and then the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Washington, Alaska chapter, actually right here in good old Olympia, Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
She came by. Jacqueline Tanney was with DKMS, and then Katie Lawrence Johnson was the senior manager of the corporate division with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Yeah.
We talked to both of them about blood cancers and blood disorders in general, and then what their organizations are doing to help people in this arena.
Yeah.
So it's a relatively new, I feel like, in listening to both of them, it feels like it's a relatively new science.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean...
Like the last 20 years, yeah, 30 years?
Yeah, it's not something...
Stuff's really picked up.
Yeah, they've really began to try and address leukemia and cancers through a blood, and sort of trying to... Even there are some where they try to re-engineer blood cells and things like that.
Yeah.
And so this was a really interesting topic, I thought.
Yeah.
So we dive into all that with both of them, and it's pretty cool. I don't know much about this field, so when you hear some of the interesting things that they're pulling off, it's pretty, I mean, you get a little bit like, wow, it could something be around the corner?
Yeah.
It's really a big breakthrough.
Yeah, and at one point, when we talked to Katie with Leukemia Lymphoma Society, she had said, like, when you treat blood cancers, you can essentially treat many cancers.
Right, right. So Katie, yeah, that's a great point. She felt like... If these cancers get solved, then that opens the door for solving the question of cancer.
Yeah, breast cancer, testicular cancer, colon cancer. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Everybody has been affected in one way or another by cancer, whether they've had it themselves or whether they know folks who have.
Absolutely.
And it remains a very scary proposition. I remember when we were told that our intrepid boss, Had a rare form of colon cancer. Yeah. Some of you who have listened to the podcast may have heard that particular podcast, Secretary Kim Wyman. When she delivered the news, she was really emotional about it. Mm-hmm. And when people received the news, they were very emotional about it. Because there still is this sense of like impending doom, I think.
Also, what do you do?
That's right.
I mean, you kind of feel helpless.
Yeah. Especially as a person who actually does not have the cancer, right? So the person who has cancer feels helpless because they have to go through these very rigorous things in order to try and battle the cancer. But then on the periphery, the people around them don't quite know, you know, what it is we're supposed to be there and how we're supposed to support. So it's really interesting. It really, the minute that word gets uttered, it like changes everything.
It does.
It's really strange.
Absolutely.
So these two specifically talk about blood disorders, which is really interesting. Before we get into that, you have a question.
I do.
Of the podcast.
I do.
Yes.
So how do you, Philip Kerrigan, feel about
blood,
needles, cuts, scrapes? How do you feel about that?
Sure. I am not one of those people who is afraid of needles.
You get queasy or
anything?
I don't really.
So, and I think that comes from the fact that when I was in, was it high school or middle school? I feel like it was in high school when it happened. Have you ever heard of the medication Accutane?
Yeah.
Okay. So it helps you with your acne. And I, of course, I probably will one day share my eighth grade
is that
yearbook
like,
photo.
Is that like the photo that we put up a couple
no, 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 not the
one
that, where I look like Chad Kroger from Nickelback. No, this is a different one.
Shout out Jerrica Ferguson.
This is even worse.
Oh, okay.
It's me in a...
It's even worse.
It's me in a purple button-up shirt.
Okay.
I have slicked hair.
Oh.
I have acne from like basically one side of my face all around to the other.
Okay.
I have braces.
Oh.
Also.
Yeah, so.
And then I also, I believe, had glasses at the time, too.
So you were struggling.
So it was full on, there's no hope for this young man.
Oh.
Yeah. So one day we'll share that. But anyway.
Okay.
we got turned on to Accutane, which it helps you sort of make sure that they're like, this isn't a permanent thing and there's no permanent scarring or whatever with the acne. And it was new.
Okay.
Right. And so they were still like in the phase of like, we have to actually test your blood every single month for like liver situations. Right.
So it was one of those things where they're like, we don't know if this could kill you,
right.
but
right.
it might make your face a little clearer.
Right. Right. You know,
side
you know,
effects
give,
or death.
Give and take. Give and take. So every single month I'd have to go to the doctor.
Okay.
And I'd have to draw blood.
Yeah.
And so it got to a point where I only did it for about, I think, a year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, you just basically go, it's not a big deal. So today, my dad cannot handle needles, hates everything about them. My brother gets all anxious. I really don't have much of that.
You roll in there and you're like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even really have the blood thing in and of itself doesn't really do much for me.
Yeah.
So I think overall I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm okay. That's the one that I'm okay with.
Nice.
Right. What about you?
Needles are okay for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would donate blood on a regular basis and just always be like, oh, look at this process.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
like
yeah.
watch it, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So needles are not a big thing for me.
Uh-huh.
And then as far as like injuries where you're bleeding, the only problem that I have is if something happens to my hands.
Something happens to your hands.
Yeah. Like if I'm cutting an onion, right? And
okay.
I cut my hand.
Okay.
Then I start to be like, oh, God, I think I'm going to die.
Okay.
You know,
yeah,
like I
yeah.
get a little sweaty,
okay.
a little pale.
Okay.
I got to sit down.
Yeah.
I feel a little weak.
Yeah.
If, say, my leg was sliced open and a bone was sticking out,
well,
I'd be like, oh, look at that.
Oh, really?
That's
it's
fine.
Your it's your
it's
hands.
It's my hands. I can't.
That's an
I can't
interesting point.
Yeah.
I get queasy with fingernail stuff. So whenever I'm watching like a spy movie.
Okay.
And they're interrogating him. And when they're interrogating him, he's ripping out a
yeah.
fingernail. I'm always like, oh, God.
Yeah, anything that happens to your hands freaks me out.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't know why.
Also, I'm more of a broken bone queasiness guy.
Yeah?
So, yeah, I mean, I've watched a few like sporting events where somebody gets injured.
Yeah.
And it's rough.
Yeah.
But it's not bloody. It's rough. Like their leg turns a certain way when their body's the
like,
rest
you're not
the other way.
To do that.
Yeah.
yeah.
Those make me queasy.
Okay.
But the actual act of blood itself does not actually make me crazy.
Yeah, I don't find it to be a problem.
Yeah. 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 So what we're saying is we're pretty much that part of us is like we're good to go to be serial killers, essentially.
Yeah, that part.
Right.
I'm sure other parts, not so much.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't gone beyond that line of thinking yet.
We should do a survey. We'll do it so that it's anonymous.
Yeah.
Just you and I will answer.
Yeah.
So.
Just you and I. Answer.
And then we'll decide how our serial killer bloodlust really, like, what spectrum we're on here.
So for those of you who are also potential serial killers, please hit us up on Twitter and let us know if you're afraid of needles. Hashtag needle fear?
Sure.
All right.
Needle fear. Hashtag bloodlust.
Hashtag bloodlust. Hashtag needle fear.
Hashtag feminism.
So without any further ado, we're going to go to the interview with DKMS Americas. This is Jacqueline Tanney, the Chief Development Officer. She is coming to us from New York City. Okay, so joining us on the phone from New York, I believe, right?
New York.
I feel a little bit like Larry King. Jacqueline from New York, hello. So this is the Chief Development Officer, Jacqueline Tanney of DKMS Americas. So Jacqueline, thank you for coming on.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, can you break down, I'm assuming DKMS is not this is an acronym, yes?
You know, funny enough, it is an acronym. Mm-hmm. However, it is not a United States appropriate acronym.
Oh.
And that is because DKMS was actually founded in Germany.
Oh.
And we began because of one family search for a bone marrow donor 27 years ago. And so the acronym stands for German Bone Marrow Donor Center.
Oh,
get out of here.
It does not, in fact, translate back to the U.S.
That's fantastic. That's the most unique description of a charity name we've ever had on the show.
That's a fact.
That's fantastic. So Jacqueline, can you tell you just hit on it just a little bit right now, but can you talk a little bit about the history of DKMS Americas and what it does for the community?
Absolutely. So when we were founded in Germany, it was because a man by the name of Dr. Peter Harf lost his wife, Mechthild, to leukemia. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Peter had promised her that he would help every blood cancer patient find a matching donor.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is that DKMS is an international nonprofit organization, and we lead the fight against blood cancers and blood disorders. Most commonly, those are terms like leukemia, lymphoma, sickle cell. And when conventional treatments such as chemotherapy and radiation don't resolve the cancer or the disease, oftentimes a bone marrow transplant is the only hope mm-hmm. for a patient's survival.
Mm-hmm.
And DKMS is the world's largest source of potential bone marrow donors. We have 8 million registrants in our database, and more than 70,000 of them have gone on to save lives by donating their bone marrow or blood stem cells.
Wow.
Now, 27 years later, we are certainly not stopping at that point. We are working day in and day out to recruit more donors, particularly young, male, and diverse donors, to provide patients with second chances at life.
Excellent.
Do you find that, like you said, young, male, diverse donors, like, do you find that there's a gap for, like, bone marrow for any kind of treatment for blood disorders and blood cancers for specific groups of people?
The gap becomes a matching game. So for patients who need a transplant, 70% of them rely on a perfect stranger to be their genetic twin, if you will.
Yeah.
And so what we do is we register as many people as possible to ensure that those that need a transplant are able to find that needle in a haystack.
Mm-hmm.
And that being said, we know that ancestry has a lot to do with it. And so people who come from diverse backgrounds have a more diverse genetic makeup, and it's harder for them to find matches. So that's why for us to increase diversity on the registry is very important. We also know that young men are a key audience for us. So in general, any healthy person between the ages of 18 and 55 can actually register as a potential blood stem cell or bone marrow donor.
Okay.
And from the ages of 18 onwards, they have the opportunity to become a match. But over the course of DKMS's history and observing these 70,000 transplants worldwide, we have found that donors with the highest likelihood of being matched are actually men in the age ranges of 18 and 30.
Interesting.
So while we welcome anybody to register, we are paying particular attention to young populations in the state of Washington, across the country, and across the world, and also with a real attempt to diversify the registry as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah. So you kind of, you're hitting on it already about sort of the demographic stuff. Do blood cancers or blood disorders affect specific groups of people, or does it really like range? It sounds like it is actually, at least on the donor side of it, it's important to receive more a specific donor. Do you notice differences in sort of demographics?
So for demographics on the patient side, it does not discriminate.
Okay.
And as you know, everybody has been touched by somebody in their life, whether it's a family member, a friend, a colleague, that has faced a battle with cancer.
Yeah.
And that goes across all ages, races. There's no boundary there. And so from that perspective, we are working with anybody who is fighting the disease, who is looking for a transplant. And when it comes onto the donor side, it's really about the uniqueness of matching that particular donor with the patient in need. And so we, too, are looking to diversify to meet those needs. But once again, you never know who will match and who will be that special person for you.
Have you found there are matches, like, since you have international ties, like, have you found someone, say, in Washington State who matches with someone in Japan or even further, like?
All the time.
Yeah.
And that is the real special moment for me of what defines DKMS's mission. It's when you have somebody who's an everyday person going about their day, and they have the opportunity to become a hero and to save somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
And that person is a perfect stranger. So they could be matched from Washington to Japan, as you said.
Yeah.
And what's really fascinating about our mission is after transplant, depending on the patient and the donor's circumstances, we help them to facilitate a match where they can look in the eyes of the person who saved their lives. And that is extremely emotional and such a special moment.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. I have a question about bone marrow donation just in general. It sounds, when you think of the idea of somebody donating the marrow out of, like, their actual bones, it sounds like a very, very laborious process. Can you talk a little bit about, it sounds intimidating, frankly. can you talk a little bit about that process, how that works?
Absolutely. And it does sound intimidating. And I have to say, since being at DKMS, over the years, I've spoken to endless amounts of donors, and I ask everyone, if you had the opportunity to donate again, would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
And 100% of the people that I have spoken to says that they would do it again.
Nice.
That's cool.
And so something that we are working on, and I hope the listeners will really take with them at the end of the day, is that it does sound like a scary process, but it is, in fact, manageable, and it makes such a difference in the lives of those patients and those families. So if you were to be one of the lucky ones that becomes a match for a patient, there are two ways in which you can be asked to donate. And that designation is given by the patient's doctor.
Okay.
So we do ask anybody who registers with DKMS to be comfortable giving using either method of donation. And there are two methods, as I said. So in the first method, it is used in 70% of cases, and that's called peripheral blood stem cell, or as we like to say, PBSC donation.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process, it's a non-surgical outpatient procedure. You are sitting in a chair as if you would be when you were giving blood or platelets, and the blood stem cells are collected via your bloodstream. It comes out of one arm. It goes through a machine that's extracting them, and the remaining blood comes back through your other arm. And in that process, it takes about 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours. And during that time, DKMS very much supports you. We allow somebody to come with you and sit in the room and make sure that you're comfortable and taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second process, that is used in about 25% of cases. In that instance, it is a 1 to 2 hour surgical procedure that mm-hmm. is performed under anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not experiencing any pain during the process.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to put your hand on your hip where your thumb sits, that's where the extraction is happening, and it's occurring
okay.
from the back of your pelvic bone
okay.
using a syringe.
Okay.
Now, I understand that that may sound more painful, but what we like to say generally is that when you are asked to donate using that method, it is because you are likely donating to a child or an infant, because that's the purest form of marrow.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Okay. And so when I have spoken to donors who have given using that method and I've asked them, how are you feeling? What was the process like? It's common for them to say they have some soreness.
Uh-huh.
So as if they went ice skating and they had fallen on the rink and have a bit of a bruise on their backside.
Sure.
But that the recovery is worth every moment.
Nice.
Awesome. Awesome.
So are blood cancers and disorders, like the treatments for those, are they commonly covered under insurance?
They are, and I would say that any patient who is experiencing a medical condition, they have so many expenses and they're going through a lot of hardship. And we've been very lucky to work with patients and the medical community to ensure that patients are supported and
mm-hmm.
that these processes are covered. But from the donor side, we also make sure on behalf of VKMS that they do not incur any expenses on their end.
Okay.
And so if they need to travel to go to their donation process, or if there are any expenses occurred, we like to, for example, put people into a hotel room and make sure that they're comfortable and ready, and we always have them travel with a companion. DKMS covers all of those expenses.
Awesome.
And should somebody who signs up need to miss work, we also have a wage reimbursement program.
Oh, wow.
Because
cool.
they are giving such a gift that we want to make sure there's no financial burden on somebody who goes on to donate.
That's really incredible.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
That's excellent. So let's say someone hears the podcast and they want to start giving to DKMS Americas. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
Absolutely. Donations are imperative to ensuring that DKMS is able to continue its mission. When somebody registers as mm-hmm. a potential bone marrow or blood stem cell donor, they do so by filling out a consent form and then swabbing the inside of their cheek with a cotton swab
mm-hmm.
that we then collect and process in a laboratory, and then we upload that information into a database that's accessible by the medical community to do the search functions for patients.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That process alone costs DKMS $45 per registrant.
Okay.
And we never put that expense on somebody who is signing up.
Sure. Yeah.
Because we are already so thankful that they're showing a willingness to donate and to give of themselves.
Yes.
And so for DKMS as an organization, 100% of all funds that we raise go directly back to funding the registration of somebody new.
Nice.
Excellent. That's awesome.
Yes.
So do you have any upcoming events or any programs that you'd like to highlight?
I would say from the highlight side, we are working day in and day out to sign people up as potential registrants and donors. And that is something that, like, cancer has no bounds. So
yeah.
we
mm-hmm.
offer the opportunity for people to host what we call registration drives
okay.
in their communities, in their homes, in their colleges, and even online by setting up a page and inviting other people to go ahead onto the website and to register. And so that's not one particular event. It's an ongoing effort.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if somebody were interested in getting involved by inviting others to join or by registering themselves, it's easy to text message us.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a number, 50555, or as you mentioned, visiting our website at dkms.org. And by using either one of those communication methods, somebody can request their free swab kit.
Oh, okay,
cool.
And also can suggest that they would like to do an event in their community. And so it's as easy as a text message or a website visit.
That's awesome. Well, Jacqueline, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking to us a little bit about DKMS. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. We'll talk soon. So that was our interview with Jacqueline Tanney from DKMS Americas. Super unique description of their charity
name.
I know
you liked that, didn't you?
I did like that.
Yeah,
that was
very
pretty
much
cool.
So.
We're going to go straight from her interview into the interview with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Washington, Alaska chapter. The senior manager of the corporate division, Katie Lawrence Johnson. Here she is. All right, so we're joined here by senior manager of the corporate division, Katie Johnson, from the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Washington and Alaska chapter. Thank you for joining us, Katie.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's a mouthful, I know.
We've actually had worse, believe it or not, so don't worry about it. So why don't you give us a little bit of a history of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and what it is you guys do for the community.
Okay, absolutely. So the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society has been around since 1949. We've invested over $1.2 billion into blood cancer research since our inception.
Nice.
We are currently funding $3.5 million worth of research grants at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center.
Okay. Okay.
You might have heard of it.
A little bit.
Yes, we do. We've heard of it. Small place.
And so that's what we do in terms of research locally.
Mm-hmm.
We have invested over $20 million into Washington since, I believe it's the 1970s, which is when our chapter started for Washington and Alaska.
Okay. Yeah.
Just this past year, we gave 453 cancer patients $1.1 million in financial assistance.
Wow. Okay.
And so what we do is if someone is needing to have to travel for treatment, say they live in rural Alaska and they need to get to one of the cancer hospitals in Seattle, we give them a $500 transportation reimbursement or grant, basically.
Yeah.
And we also help cancer patients pay for copays because they tend to be very, very expensive, specifically for blood cancer. So we fund up to, I believe it's $5,000 a year per cancer patient who qualifies. So the way that we do that is through our events and corporate gifts as well as individual gifts and so on and so forth. So we don't take any grants from the government. We are a specifically self-funded nonprofit organization.
Nice.
Okay, cool. Cool.
So when I was looking up, you know, what like blood cancers and blood disorders, something I noticed was like common symptoms for leukemia are things like fatigue and fever and bruising.
Mm-hmm.
So like for me, I know I would be like, yeah, I am, you know, maybe I'm sick, like I have a cold or something like that. So in your experience and like with working with any kind of patients, do you find that people are thinking they have a cold instead of something more serious like leukemia, like when they first start having symptoms?
What I can speak to is what I've heard from patients. We actually have a child who is involved with our organization. Her family is very much involved. She's from the South Sound, actually. I'm not going to name her. But she's from this area. And she complained of back pain. So back pain, and then she had a fever that just wouldn't stop. And so her mom took her in for what they thought was just going to be, you know, a checkup. Why does she have this unexplained fever? And then they discovered that she had leukemia. So that's what happened the first time. And then the back pain came back and they didn't know what was causing it. And they were like, well, it's definitely not the leukemia because, you know, we cured that and everything is gone. So it must just be something else, like a sore muscles. And they took her to a chiropractor and tried to get her worked out. Still couldn't figure it out. Her leukemia had come back it had developed in her spine. And she was in pain for months before they discovered that that's what was happening. So she's in treatment again right now. But to your point, it can start with someone just not feeling great, so they go into the doctor and then they do some tests, usually a blood test, and then they discover that white blood cells are way too active. And then they're diagnosed.
So
and then they immediately start treatment if it's acute. lymphoblastic leukemia, which is ALL. Uh-huh. It affects kids between the ages of 4 and 8 mostly.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And so it's, since it's acute, it happens very fast.
Yeah.
And if you don't treat it right away, then it can be some pretty serious repercussions.
Right.
So they end up going into treatment for a minimum of I believe, 18 months to 2 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And what? Your whole life changes.
Yeah, yeah. What's the average? I mean, so I remember seeing a movie about a famous running back who like got leukemia and then died at like 23, 24. What is the kind of average age that people discover that they have leukemia, and maybe even the life expectancy behind leukemia?
I'm not sure I could speak to that specifically because there are, last I remember, I think there's 12 different types of leukemia.
Okay. Wow.
And then you move into lymphoma.
Yeah.
And there are, I believe it's 33 different types of Hodgkin lymphoma.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Several different types of non-Hodgkin.
Man, that in and of itself makes your head spin. You're like, man.
It really does.
How can people have that many of the same kind of disease?
Like, exactly.
Yeah. So many different.
Each cancer is different, right?
Yeah.
So
right.
Each person who's affected by a blood cancer goes through different things.
Right.
Oh,
man, a lot.
Yeah. So it's very tricky.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really say there's an average age. I could tell you the average age of specific diseases.
Sure.
So I believe AML, which is acute myeloid leukemia, that's actually one that we are having the hardest time treating.
Yeah.
There haven't been a lot of new treatments to come out for that specific disease in well over 40 years.
Wow.
So the Leukemia Lymphoma Society started something called the Beat AML Initiative, and it's a clinical trial pairing up 20 or getting, I believe it's 25 different cancer research centers across the country together to figure out, like, how do we beat AML?
Yeah.
And the reason why is because if you're diagnosed with AML, then you have a 20% chance of survival.
Wow.
Within
wow.
5 years.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So it's one that's really, really tricky.
Yeah. So speaking of treatments, what kind of treatments are available for blood cancers or leukemia?
It really depends on the type that you get, but usually there's chemo involved for a certain amount of rounds, depending on the type that you get and your age.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes there's a bone marrow transplant or a stem cell transplant. Folks who don't have any other options sometimes will seek CAR T cell immunotherapy treatment.
What is that?
Let me tell you all about that. So,
yeah.
CAR T immunotherapy is something that LLS funded 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Carl June at the University of Pennsylvania discovered that you could take the HIV virus and re-engineer it.
Wow.
Seriously?
Yep. So that it could go into a patient's immune system and supercharge T cells to kill cancer.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. He brought that idea to the government and to whoever else he could, and they thought it was nuts.
Yeah,
that
there'd be a bit of skepticism
there.
The
HIV virus, right?
Yeah.
And so he brought it to LLS, and we said that it had promise. So we funded that.
Wow.
Okay.
Holy cow.
And as a result, over hundreds of patients have received CAR T cell immunotherapy, and they have survived and been cured.
And don't have, like, HIV.
And don't have HIV because it's re-engineered so it can't cause disease anymore.
Get out of here.
Wow.
Yeah.
What the? That's
what
insanity.
You could do that.
Yeah.
It's madness.
Yeah, I know. It's truly incredible, right?
Wow. Holy cow.
So we funded that type of research and several other types of research. The other thing, too, is blood cancer drugs, 40% of them go on to treat other cancers.
Mm. Okay.
So if you're going to cure blood cancer, there's a very good possibility you're going to find a cure to cancer overall.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So is that like where the baseline starts? Find a way to cure blood cancers and then like you could spread beyond that?
I mean, we believe so.
Yeah.
So we believe that beating cancer is in our blood.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay.
And the way that we've seen that is, for example, there's a drug called Rituxan.
Okay.
And it started out as a blood cancer drug, but then it goes on to treat breast cancer patients, and they're actually still on Rituxan and it's helping to cure breast cancer.
Nice.
And so the other thing about blood cancer is you can do a lot more with a vial of blood than you can a solid tumor in a person. Right, so you don't have to poke and prod anybody a tremendous amount. There's no biopsy involved. You just take a vial of blood and then you get to poke and prod and see what else you can do with it.
Yeah.
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 So it's a much more I guess, flexible type of sample that you can do all sorts of different things to.
Right, yeah. Right.
So that's why we're seeing so much success. And then as evidenced by that success, we there have been 25 different FDA approvals for blood cancer therapy over the last 18 months.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we funded 20 of those drugs.
Cool. Nice. Cool. So. Okay, that's amazing.
Do you find like any kind of FDA approved, like getting research and drugs that you guys are funding, getting them into the FDA and getting that approval process, is that difficult?
Well, that's actually not us. Okay. We're kind of like the middleman. We're helping to fund those pharmaceutical companies who have this idea.
Yeah.
We call it, it's through our therapy acceleration program or TAP. We give them a certain amount of money and we say, you know, here, take this, do your research, and you know, once you get an FDA approval, let us know. And basically we'd just love to be able to talk about that because it's really important for people to know where their money is going that they're fundraising.
That's awesome. So. Are blood cancers or blood disorders increasing or decreasing, and why, in either direction, do you think?
Oh man. So blood cancer is tricky because you don't know what causes it.
Uh-huh.
And you can't prevent it.
Yeah.
And it affects everybody.
Yeah.
While it seems like a small sample size, there's 5,400 people that will be diagnosed with blood cancer in Washington and Alaska this year.
Oh, wow.
But it's still a pretty tremendous amount.
Yeah.
It. Mm-hmm. And then specifically for that AML disease, like I talked about, 3 out of 4 people will not survive that disease.
Wow. That's so it's crazy. A 75% mortality rate, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
80%.
80%.
But yeah. It's definitely, it's tricky. So, you know, we don't know what causes it. And so that's why we need more money for research. Mm-hmm. And the folks over at the different research institutes are coming up with all sorts of really great ideas. So they're figuring out all the way down to the molecular structure of blood and saying, like, does it start at the blood forming cells, or does it start, you know, is there like environmental causes, or just really trying to figure out what causes it.
Wow.
Are there popular theories, like, as far as, like, is it more of an environmental thing, or is it more of, like, a molecular? There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of theories, for sure. The one thing that I can speak to is how firefighters are affected by blood cancer.
Really?
We have a firefighter stair climb, and it's the world's largest. We have 2,000 people that come out from all over the world to participate and climb the Columbia Tower.
Yeah.
We're coming up on our 28th year, and firefighters are 1.5 times more likely to be diagnosed with a blood cancer in a lifetime.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is up with that?
So we feel like, I mean, since it's firefighters specifically and like first responders, okay, maybe there's something going on with structural fires.
Sure.
Right.
You know, obviously maybe there's chemicals that are involved that are affecting these folks and their everyday work.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So there's lots of different research going on about that and different organizations that are dedicated to figuring out why firefighters are getting cancer, you know, at disproportionate rates.
Right.
To anyone else.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
That's madness. So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to start giving to Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Which we hope they do.
Yes, absolutely. So what do donations do for your organization?
So donations fund that research that I've been talking about. And they fund the copay assistance program. And they fund the travel assistance. And we also have an informational resource center.
Uh-huh.
So $10 would help connect a medical professional who's on staff at our information resource center by phone with someone who's having questions about cancer.
Excellent. Okay. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Do you guys have any events or promotions or anything? You mentioned the stair climb. Do you guys have anything coming up that you'd like to share with folks?
Yep. So we have a lot of events that are coming up in September and October because September is Blood Cancer Awareness Month.
Look at that.
You'll be seeing a whole lot of media coming up this month on a lot of different media channels.
Mm-hmm.
And so we encourage everybody to make a donation during the month of September. Yep. So our next event that's coming up is Light the Night. It's on October 27th at the Seattle Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I have news for folks that are in the South Sound. We actually have a shuttle that is being provided by
MultiCare.
Nice.
To help South Sound patients and families get up to the Seattle Center.
Oh, that's cool.
There's a fundraising element involved, but if you go to lightthenight.org/Washington, you'll be able to learn more. And
very cool.
There.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that
it's going to
really
be a really
cool.
fun event. And plus, that event is great because it's very patient-centric.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of people who have been recently diagnosed or families who are going out to support someone or really in honor of someone that they've lost to blood cancer. And it's an illuminated night walk.
Wow.
So there's lots of different blinky, fun things everywhere. Nice. And really, it's all about just making sure that the community is coming together to support patients.
That's cool. Awesome.
And bring the light to the darkness of cancer.
Cool.
So
excellent. That's really cool. So, Katie, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast and talking to us a little bit about your organization. Sounds awesome.
Absolutely. All thank you. And we greatly appreciate any donations that anybody wants to give. We know that if you are funding blood cancer research, you're going to find the cure to cancer. And we need you to come with us.
Nice.
That's a good way to end it.
Thank you.
All right, so that was our interview with Katie Johnson of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Washington, Alaska chapter. Heather, do you have stats, facts, and figures or trivia related to blood?
I do. And like I initially had some stuff that was more about like blood cancers and blood disorders. But you know what?
What?
I kind of feel like Jacqueline and Katie both talked a lot about them.
Okay.
So then I was like, maybe I'm going to change it up a little. Not talk so much about the diseases so much as just some random stuff.
Okay. I like random things.
I know, right? So, in school, I don't know about you, but when I was in middle school, I remember learning about blood diseases within the royal family.
Okay.
You know, instead of like my constitutional rights or how to do taxes, I learned,
I learned
that the royal family had suffered from hemophilia, England, right?
Yes.
So there's this thing called Queen Victoria's disease.
Okay. Ooh, Queen Victoria's disease.
Queen Victoria's disease. So it is, in fact, hemophilia. And there are descendants of Queen Victoria. She was like one of the first known carriers of hemophilia. But the descendants of hers...
you feel like that came from like an incest situation? Maybe she had hemophilia because like brothers hooked up with sisters and first cousins hooked up with each other?
It could be. It could very well be. Like, you know, your gene pool isn't being diluted.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of people who are like,
Yeah.
Questionable, right? But like there's this little graph I found, which I'll have to share. But like there are descendants upon descendants throughout the United Kingdom who get married into other houses like Russia, Albany, the Queen of Spain, even say the last Tsar of Russia, his son had hemophilia and he was a descendant of Queen Victoria.
Wow.
It's kind of it's
that's
kind of
insane.
Yeah. But I found this other thing that was also because like I was looking up, you know, Queen Victoria and like diseases, but King George the Third, right? Madness of King George.
Okay, yeah.
They say that his madness, of course, is well known.
Yes,
but it's possibly that it was caused by a variegate porphyria.
Porphyria.
So porphyria is a blood disease.
Okay,
and it they say that an acute form of it struck George the Third.
Okay.
So it occurs, this porphyria occurs when a specific enzyme's missing during the production of hemoglobin in your red blood cells.
Okay.
So porphyrins are overproduced and the buildup causes symptoms like abdominal snowman. Yeah, it causes abdominal snowman. You have trouble in your abdomen.
There you go.
Hey.
Tummy trouble.
There's nervous system issues, quote, madness, skin sensitivity, and dark urine.
Oh.
George III would become violent, and he would ramble for hours during his bouts, but he would have periods of remission, and he'd be like a normal, hey, I'm going to be king and rule this place like it should be.
Right.
But like at points he didn't recognize his wife. They hid him away. They were just like, oh, sweet jeebies, we can't have this guy in public. Yeah. But it was because he had a blood disorder.
Yeah. Wow.
Craziness,
well, look
right?
at that. Yeah. Blood disorders. That's crazy.
Yeah. And he died after a particularly bad attack in 1819.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. So, that is interesting.
Facts.
Those are facts. So that was this week's podcast on blood cancers and blood disorders. I want to thank Jacqueline and Katie again for coming on the show. give you some upcoming events. On September 25th at 11 a.m., the Bite of LNI is in Tumwater. It has turned into a pretty huge event, raising thousands of dollars.
I've never been. I'm so excited.
Yeah, this will be pretty cool.
Yeah.
This will be pretty cool.
I love food.
It was, yeah, me too. It actually ended up basically creating an offshoot, which was the Ethiopian luncheon. So if anybody who listens to us went to that, this is where that kind of started.
Yeah.
And then the other main thing is the CFD Masquerade Ball. We're going to start promoting it now here on the podcast. It happens on October 20th at 7 p.m. here at the Capitol. It's a huge event. It makes a lot of money for the combined fund drive and helps lower our administrative costs so more of your dollars go to the charity that they were intended for. So thank you, everybody, for participating in that. And, of course, October 1st through October 7th is the first week to give. Washington State Employees Credit Union once again donated about $10,000 worth of $5 Starbucks cards to us. Anybody who starts a current donation to any charity of their choice of $5 during that time period, ups a current donation of $5 or more through their paycheck during that time period, or logs one volunteer hour during that time period, gets a $5 Starbucks card.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. That'll be coming October 1st through the 7th. So look out for that. And then also, one last thing, just a reminder to everyone who actually listens to this through their feed, their whatever podcast feed you have on your phone, we will be doing a podcast every day during the campaign. It will be exhausting. So I hope you people are happy.
Because we're gonna be dying of exhaustion.
So they're not long. They're not the big ones like this every single time. These are reserved for the every other Fridays as they are now. They're smaller ones that kind of hit on an individual charity and what your donation would do for that particular charity. It's called the Daily Drip, but it'll be in our Podcast for Good feed, and it'll be labeled appropriately. So thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of Blood Cancers and Blood Disorders, and we will see you next time.
Bye.